That's another one. I got that juice. New AP. She got that juice. She got that squeeze. She got that wet. I'm on them skis. I got that drip. I'm overseas. D-R-I.
Welcome, everyone. It's good to be back here on The Juice, and I'm going to be honest, I'm excited for this one. I mean, life is good right now. I'm in college. This is my dorm room here. It's kind of messy. Our beds haven't been lofted, so everything's kind of crammed, but once it does get lofted, I will show everyone my room and all the people watching from, I'm assuming, their dorm rooms. And yes, watching, because now I have my own, I can, you know, do my podcast from Zoom, and I can upload the video link to Spotify, and we can have a podcast right here, and you can see my face, you can see me talk, and you can see my reactions, you can see my facial expressions. Everything about this podcast is going to be great. So, first thing I want to touch on, Imagine Sports. We've been having Twitch. We're going to be having Twitch streams weekly. I'll be uploading those on my TikTok and reminding you guys to join those. We're trying to grow a movement here, and led by, you know, Jack Cody, the Jason Tatum, Tom Brady, Jamar Chase, Dick Ryder that we all see on TikTok. Led by him and his guidance and his popularity, hopefully we can rise to the top of sports media for our generation. So it's a dream, but you know, got to chase it, of course. So, first thing I want to touch on, it's been a while. Second thing I want to touch on, touched on Imagine Sports already. So, second thing I want to touch on, we're going to get right into the show here. So, yeah, it's been a while, and a lot of stuff has happened in the world of Aaron Rodgers, of course. My favorite player, best athlete of all time, greatest quarterback of all time, that guy. A lot's happened with him. And the things I want to touch on are, you know, what he said on these podcasts with Aubrey Marcus, Joe Rogan, about ayahuasca, these psychedelic drugs he took, or, you know, psychedelic brew, if you want to call it that. The Alan Lazard, Aaron Rodgers, make Green Bay great again t-shirt, these things. And I kind of want to respond to how the media has responded to it. So let's start with the ayahuasca stuff. So Aaron Rodgers, we know he does things differently nowadays. He had a mental awakening about life, and it's made him play better football. So I can't really disagree with anything he's ever said about, you know, what he's done, the changes he's made in his life, and the things he's been taking. And I can't disagree with any of that, because the biggest thing I care about when it comes to Aaron Rodgers is, one, how he's playing on the football field, and then two, how he's doing off the field. And both of the things, from what I'm hearing and from what I'm watching, everything's going well for him. And the media, they just don't seem to like when our stars do things differently. It's just, it's in the media's DNA that if you're not just a cookie cutter, you know, give every single media person you talk to a straight shoot answer, and, you know, do things correctly, don't do anything bad off the field. And granted, that's something that we should all respect, which Aaron Rodgers has not done anything bad off the field whatsoever. He's never gotten suspended, never gotten in trouble, other than the immunized stuff. And to me, that was perfectly fine. Everyone knows how I feel about that. But so the psychedelic brew and the ayahuasca. After Aaron Rodgers told Aubrey Marcus about the ayahuasca that he took and how it made him just feel better about himself and made him play better football, I watch, you know, FS1 about every morning. I watch The Herd and Undisputed. And the response by at least Colin Cowherd that I didn't like is he said that Rodgers, when you don't get married and you feel that, like, everything kind of revolves around you and you don't have a wife or a person in your life that can really bring you down to another, a lower level, it changes things. Well, so basically Colin Cowherd went on a tangent saying that Aaron Rodgers is kind of doing everything off the field wrong. He's doing everything wrong. He's just doing weird stuff. He didn't like that the Aaron Rodgers, rumored girlfriend, he made fun of her name. Blue of Earth, I think is what her name is, but I don't care. I'm not gonna go out and say that her name is weird. He does things differently. We all know that. And yeah, he talks about Rodgers, doing ayahuasca and the immunized stuff when he said when how he treated the media last year. And Colin Coward thinks that Aaron is just he's not doing it right. He should do it the way Tom Brady does it. He should do everything the way Russell Wilson does it. Well, here's the thing, Colin. I would maybe think you had a point if Aaron Rodgers in the past 3 years was acting quote unquote weird and on the field was doing absolutely nothing to give the Packers W's on Sundays. That's far from the case. In the past 3 years, actually in the past 4 years, Aaron Rodgers has gone 13-3. Sorry, the past 3 years, 13-3, 13-3, and 13-4. In the past 2 years, he's won two MVPs and is playing, in my opinion, the best football of his life outside of hit the best year of his career, 2012. I've never seen Aaron Rodgers throw the football better than he is right now. And it just makes no sense to me how Colin Cowherd can criticize what Aaron Rodgers is doing and what Aaron Rodgers is saying off the field when on the field, all Colin Cowherd should care about is how Aaron Rodgers is playing and if he deserves to be criticized. Well, he doesn't. Besides a bad game against the 49ers in the divisional playoff, what is there to criticize about Aaron Rodgers on the field? And if there's nothing to criticize about him on the field, what's there to criticize with him about on off the field issues? He seems to be doing everything right. He's happier than he's ever been in his career. He is, so far, no teammate has ever come out and said they hated him in about 3 years, and those were very small instances of people. And yeah, he's playing great football. So who the hell is Colin Cowherd to say that Aaron Rodgers should be doing this, he should be doing that, when in reality, Aaron Rodgers is a top five quarterback of all time, and he's, I in my opinion, done everything right in his career off the field. I really can't think of one thing that Aaron Rodgers should really be criticized for off the field, besides maybe handling the COVID situation a little bit better. But then again, Aaron Rodgers doesn't owe the media anything. If he wants to say he's immunized, just he can say it. What is the me what's the media gonna do? Yell at Aaron Rodgers, kick and scream on their outlets or on Sports Illustrated or ESPN saying Aaron Rodgers misled us, Aaron Rodgers lied to us. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what Aaron Rodgers did. All that matters is the NFL knew he wasn't vaccinated and his team didn't know he wasn't vaccinated, which leads me into my next one. This one, when I watched Undisputed, this one really made me mad. So Aaron Rodgers went on Joe Rogan and supposedly, this was the headline on this segment, was that Aaron Rodgers said to Joe Rogan's face, yes, I misled the media, and yes, I lied to them, and I don't care. One, he didn't say that. Again, two, going back to my last point, if he did say that, who is supposed to care? No one. If the media really is going to kick and scream about that, that's their problem. But he didn't. He said on the podcast that Aaron that he said he was immunized, and he did not get a follow-up question about being saying he was immunized. He wasn't going to say he was vaccinated because he's not vaccinated. If he would have said he was vaccinated, yes, he deliberately lied. He said he was immunized. And they did not ask him a follow-up question about what does immunized mean because he would have told them that. So then Shannon Sharp, a person who did not listen to the podcast, me, a person who listened to the entire podcast, Shannon Sharp obviously did not. All he picked was little parts of the podcast and kind of put those pieces together to form this own vision in his mind. Aaron Rodgers saying that he lied. So Shannon Sharp went on to say that Aaron Rodgers is a horrible person. Aaron Rodgers is a prick. And Aaron Rodgers is aloof and a diva and all these things. Obviously, everyone knows I disagree with these things. I think Aaron Rodgers is a little bit misunderstood. Yeah, he does things a little differently, but I think the media just kind of misunderstands him. This is not even misunderstanding. This is just blatant name calling to get clicks, which is exactly what Aaron Rodgers says all the time about what the media does. Aaron Rodgers is not a prick. Aaron Rodgers is not a horrible person. If Aaron Rodgers was a horrible person, he wouldn't be on Joe Rogan's podcast whatsoever. He wouldn't be on TMT's podcast whatsoever. He wouldn't be on Bustin' It with the Boys whatsoever. And he wouldn't be on Aubrey Marcus's podcast whatsoever. He would, if Aaron Rodgers was a prick, he'd openly say on the podcast that he absolutely hates, like, he absolutely hates the media. He'd say that he absolutely, like, despises what the media stands for. He'd say he absolutely, he would do what Shannon Sharpe did and name call the media, call them what, call them pussies or something. I don't know what he would call them. But Aaron Rodgers isn't a prick. Aaron Rodgers is loved by just about every single teammate, just about every single teammate he's ever had. Shannon Sharpe doesn't want to listen to that. He doesn't want to listen to when Matt LaFleur says that Aaron Rodgers is one of his best friends. No, he doesn't want to listen to that. All he wants to say is that Aaron Rodgers lied to everyone and that Aaron Rodgers just wanted to be the center of attention by saying he was immunized and all that stuff. That he wants to be the center of attention. Sometimes Aaron Rodgers likes to poke fun at the media. So what? What does Shannon Sharpe care? He's never gonna like meet Aaron Rodgers in his life. He's never probably never gonna like strike up a good conversation with Aaron Rodgers in his life, and some of that's on him. But like again, what does Aaron Rodgers owe the media to? He owes them nothing. He does things. He does what he does off the field, and in return, he brings us great football. As Packer fans, brings us great football every single Sunday. The NFL and the Green Bay Packers organization knew that Aaron Rodgers wasn't vaccinated. Shannon Sharpe did not want to listen to the fact that Aaron Rodgers had to test negative every single day because he wasn't vaccinated, and he did not want to hear that Aaron Rodgers walked around the whole entire facility, masked and distanced from people. And Shannon Sharpe wants to just kick and scream that Aaron Rodgers, oh yeah, but he wasn't vaccinated, but he wasn't wearing a mask in interviews. Yeah, I don't care. He's in a room with all vaccinated reporters, and they're all masked, and Aaron Rodgers is standing 10 feet away from them. That's something that Shannon Sharpe, as a liberal, should realize is crazy. If you're in a room with mass reporters that are vaccinated, and you're 10 feet away from them to answer their questions, why should you have to wear a mask? You shouldn't have to wear a mask. Not at all. But Shannon Sharpe doesn't want to hear that. He just wants to buy into this liberal agenda about COVID that everyone should just essentially stay in their rooms and lock themselves away so they don't get this disease. When so Aaron Rodgers, I think, just wants to live his life and go back to normal, which to some degree we are. But Shannon Sharpe, as a vaccinated, double vaccinated, probably boosted person, wears his mask around the Undisputed facility and stays away from people. And then Skip Bayless, of course, just added on to that. But we all know how Skip Bayless feels about Aaron Rodgers, and no need to comment that. But the fact that Shannon Sharpe called Aaron Rodgers a prick and a horrible person after just saying that he said he was immunized when he wasn't, when he in reality was, but he just didn't say he was vaccinated. Shannon Sharpe doesn't know a thing about Aaron Rodgers. He didn't listen to the Joe Rogan podcast. He didn't listen to anything that Aaron Rodgers said in that podcast. All he cared about was the little parts of the podcast and putting them together. All right. Now that we touched on that, it's time to touch on probably the worst division in football, maybe second worst if you want to count the AFC South, the NFC East. Now, in my humble opinion, I think this is probably the easiest division to pick the winner of, besides maybe the AFC East with the Bills. And I think it's obvious that the Eagles are going to win the NFC East. The Cowboys are, quote unquote, a mess, I think. First off, you lose Tyron Smith just like you do every year. That's your franchise left tackle. He's gone. You lose Amari Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb is essentially going to be going out there and getting doubled every single time because their next best receiver is that Turpin kid or whatever. Zeke is still Zeke. He's really not going to give you much in the tail end of, you know, his talent in his prime. Tony Pollard should probably be getting more snaps than him, but I think the whole Cowboys organization, I think Jerry Jones has a big part of this. He doesn't want to see Tony Pollard getting the snaps. He knows Tony Pollard is better than Zeke, but he paid Zeke all the money he gave him, and you know, he's still reminiscing about the first 3 years that Zeke was in the NFL, and he's like, no, we got to give Zeke the touches so that, you know, I can't look like I was wrong. So when you have an absolute dictator that Jerry Jones is in the front office, And then you got Mike McCarthy, somebody who really doesn't know what he's doing as an NFL head coach at this point in his career. And then you have a defense that is always going to be Swiss cheese. Your best corner is known to give up a lot of yards in Trayvon Diggs. You really don't have a competent pass rush outside of Micah Parsons. And you have one great receiver that still has a lot to prove, considering he didn't get targeted a lot last year. So we really don't know how talented CeeDee Lamb exactly is. And then you got a quarterback who's overpaid and above average. I'm not seeing it in the Cowboys, and I think the Eagles with, Jalen Hurts coming into his own this year, a great wide receiving core, a solid running game. Miles Sanders isn't great, but you have three running backs in that room that can make plays on any time they're given the ball, and that's Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, and Kenneth Gainwell. A great O-line, as always. And then the Eagles, probably a top 10 defense for sure in the NFL. I think that the Eagles are going to absolutely run through this division. I don't see it with the Commanders. I think they just strike me as a very average team. Carson Wentz isn't going to really change your franchise. Antonio Gibson has lost it in terms of his talent. Brian Robinson is going to be out. Terry McLaurin is your one receiver. And again, just a pretty average defense. And then no need to talk about the Giants. So yeah, I think this is pretty easy to choose. In my division winners, I got the Packers winning the North, the Rams winning the West. That's a very tough division, obviously. I think the Bucks squeak by the Saints in the South, and then AFC South, I got the Colts. AFC West, I got the man. I think the Broncos have the potential to win, but I'm gonna take the Chargers and AFC West. AFC North, I got the Bengals, and the AFC East, I got the Bills. That's a very easy decision for me. And then I got the Eagles running through the NFC East relatively easily. All right. So I kind of want to touch on that. Now we got a little bit of college football recap. I'm going to throw in a few overreaction, underreaction. I'm going to give you a storyline and I'm going to say, is this an overreaction? Is this an underreaction? Or is this a proper reaction? So the biggest thing we found last Friday, the college football playoff is going to be expanded to 12 teams within the next 3, 4 years, probably a little earlier than that. And overreaction, underreaction, does this completely change the landscape of college football? I think that is somehow such a big statement. I think that is somehow an underreaction. The college football playoff was horrible. It's horrible. One, you have teams that know that if they lose one game, unless you're Alabama, unless you're Clemson, unless you're Ohio State, unless you're some cases Oklahoma, unless you're Georgia, you're probably out of the college football playoff, which leads me in my fourth one. Unless you make the college football playoff, you are not seen as a top tier program. And since the college football playoff has been a thing since 2013, I think, 2014, I think, the only supposed top-tier programs in college football are Alabama, Oklahoma, Clemson, Ohio State, and then even Georgia. As great of a program Georgia is, it's not like they're making the college football playoff every year. It's like every 3 years, every 3 or 2 years. Yeah, and then you got middling programs that have made it a few times, like Notre Dame and barely LSU. They made it one time. I just think that the college football playoff has completely ruined the sport, and especially in the recruiting base. Because when you're going to recruit a five-star recruit, unless you're Alabama, unless you're Clemson, unless you're Ohio State, it's very hard to convince that recruit to come to your school when you know that the college football playoff is probably the same 3, 4 teams every single year. It's hard to say it to a five-star recruit. Like, let's say if you're going to Penn State or Wisconsin. It's hard to say, come to our school. We probably won't make the college football playoff unless we go undefeated this year. What's another reason for that guy to want to go to your school? He wants to go there to win a national championship and develop himself into an NFL prospect. There's not a big reason if you're a five-star recruit to want to go to like a program like Penn State or Wisconsin or LSU or Oregon if you're probably not going to make the college football playoff. And these other programs with these great coaches like Ryan Day and Dabo Swinney and Nick Saban, they're not going to want to come to your program. So they're going to want to come to those programs. And it shows in the recruiting bases. Like Alabama has, think between Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, I think they have like 70 to 80% of the five-star recruits that come out of every single draft class. Joel Klatt touched on it best on his podcast. It's completely ruined the landscape of the sport and how teams determine themselves as successful. Like you have to make this playoff that only has four teams in it. That's just not right. So I think that with the 12-team playoff, it will add more parity to college football. And some people say like a decent argument for why expanding the playoff wouldn't work is it's just more bad football, because we see how like a team, if Alabama this year in the 12 team playoff landscape, they'd probably play like Notre Dame or so in their first playoff game of the 12-team landscape, and everyone would be like, well, that's not going to be a good game. Well, maybe not, but it's good to have those games there. It's good to have a team like when Texas A&M had one loss and they didn't make it in the Mac Jones Alabama year. Who's to say they couldn't have beat Alabama? That was a great Alabama team, but who's to say they couldn't have won their first playoff game and made a national championship? Like, college football is very unpredictable like that, and when you're given these teams opportunities to go to the playoff, anything can happen. It's almost like March Madness to some degree. But we always say, but some people say college basketball is better than college football, because there's just the blue blood teams are not just the only teams in the playoff, because there's 64 teams and literally anything can happen. You look at the past 10 years for college basketball champions, Kentucky's not winning every single one like Alabama is. Duke isn't winning every single one like Clemson or a team like Clemson is. It's unpredictable like that. So I think that yes, changing the playoff to 12 teams, I believe it'll absolutely change the landscape of the sport and give us more parity. So yes, it is a little bit of an underreaction. Next, I want to talk about Graham Mertz and the Wisconsin Badgers. Graham Mertz played a very solid game. I think he had two incompletions, a little over 220 yards. He threw a touchdown, looked very comfortable in the pocket, made some really nice passes. And is this an overreaction or underreaction? Is Graham Mertz finally taking that next step and living up to the hype that we saw in that first Illinois game and that what we saw when he was in high school and committed to Wisconsin as a four-star recruit and became the highest recruited quarterback Wisconsin has ever had? Is he living fine? Is he finally, is he going to live up to that hype this year? That's a little bit of an overreaction. And it's pretty easy as to why it is an overreaction. One, they played Illinois State. They played an FCS school. But two, the stats are a little bit skewed because going into the first drive on offense, I believe it was a first drive on offense in the second half, Graham Mertz threw an 80, essentially a 90-yard screen pass to Chimera DK, and he followed that up with a nice pass to him in the end zone for a touchdown. But a good chunk of his yards were a non-impressive throw where he just threw a screen to Chimera DK, and it was just the perfect play call, and he ran for another 80 yards. So that's one. That's another reason. And two, he was to some degree thrown to a decent amount of wide open people, and on the back of Braylon Allen, it wasn't like it just an insane, like you look at the stats and you say, wow, Graham Mertz played incredible. He played good, and he played a lot better than we've seen him play in the past year. But nobody, and I don't think Wisconsin Badger Twitter, Badger football Twitter, the fan base is overreacting about this. They're gonna say, all right, let's see how he plays against Washington State. He could probably have another good game against them because Washington State is known to always have horrible defenses. And they play New Mexico State, and then they got the big one against Ohio State. I don't think Graham Mertz is going to be nearly as bad as he was last year, because last year he was pretty horrible. But we got to wait and see on this guy. I mean, we heard good things in camp. We got the Heisman. We got a Heisman candidate in Braylon Allen in the backfield, which is going to take a lot of weight off Graham Mertz. And to be honest, Graham Mertz should have probably only had one incompletion. The first pass he threw was incompleted to a wide open receiver down the middle that probably would have gone for a 30-yard gain. But yeah, It was low key kind of a game manager game, but he made some really nice passes. I'd say there were a few passes. He had one to Chimri Dike between like two defenders on a out route. That was very solid. He's got nice touch on his, he had nice touch on his throws. And last year we saw a lot of, underthrows and overthrows and balls that looked like they had like zero zip on them. And that was my biggest issue with him. He's got no velocity on his passes, and it looked like he did against Illinois State. But yeah, we'll wait and see. For Graham Mertz, probably we'll have to wait and see. So, wait and see till week four when they play Ohio State, and I know that's going to be a very hard test for him. So I'm not going to expect him to play like a Heisman candidate, but we're going to wait and see for that game. And that leads me into Ohio State against Notre Dame. Overreaction, underreaction. Did Ohio State prove that their offense has flaws against Notre Dame? I believe that is very much a overreaction. CJ Stroud played a really, really tough ball game. He was getting, he was under pressure pretty much the whole night against a very good Notre Dame defense. Marcus Freeman is a defensive-minded coach, and Notre Dame always has good players. Last year with Brian Kelly, it was sort of a down year for Notre Dame, and they were very, very young, especially up front and on the offensive line. And they were right there with Ohio State for the first three quarters there at the line of scrimmage, because that's always what Notre Dame's brand of football is. The reason why they can't take it to the next step is because in terms of skill positions, they are never at the same level as Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson, which is why they always get killed in the college football playoff. But in Notre Dame's first game, I was very impressed with them without Brian. Notre Dame's first game without Brian Kelly, I was very impressed with them. I think they're going to be a top 10 team for most of the season. And I really like where Marcus Freeman is going with that. But Ohio State, I think, proved to me that they're easily a top three. They're right there with Georgia and Alabama at this moment for the top three spots in college football playoff. I feel like it's them and then everyone else at the moment. Clemson was played very poor last night against a very bad Georgia Tech team. First off, Ohio State's defense last year wasn't the greatest as it had been in the previous years. They got a great defense now. Buckner was under pressure the entire game, and they got some really good players on the edges, and they have a pretty good pass rush. But I think people were obviously a little disappointed with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but he got hurt, and in the beginning, I think that Notre Dame really found themselves taking him out of the game, and he unfortunately got injured and had to sit out the whole entire second half. And CJ Stroud, really couldn't get the run game could not be could, was not getting going for Ohio State. Travion Henderson was bottled up the entire game, but that allowed CJ Stroud to have to throw it a lot towards the end of the game, and they went on a 95-yard drive to close it out. I mean, that's the stuff that I think people watch this game and say, how could they? This Ohio State, they have all these weapons. They got Emeka Buka. They got Marvin Harrison Jr. They got the Heisman front runner, in my opinion. Heisman, front runner coming into the season, CJ Stroud, and they got Travion Henderson in the backfield. Why shouldn't they put up 40 points on Notre Dame? Well, Notre Dame has a really good defense, and when your top receiver goes down like that right away, it changes some things up in your offense. So I think this was just a little bit of some, a first game, for Ohio State. They get frazzled and they realized that they probably thought they were going to push Notre Dame around the field, which I didn't think they were going to do. Notre Dame has always been tough at the line of scrimmage, and CJ Stroud was essentially running for his life, and he made some really, really good plays towards the end of the game, and that's why I think he's probably going to be the first quarterback taken out of the draft. I mean, he just did things that, frankly, I don't know if we've seen Bryce Young do against a great defense, and we saw Bryce Young get frazzled against Georgia. Granted, he's very young. But CJ Stroud, I think we saw that against Notre Dame, that he, when the chips are down and they're on the table and you're going up against a tough defense like that, can you make the plays in the end of the game that can, lead your team to victory? He did that. So I think that's an overreaction to say that that Ohio State's offense, doesn't look like it's as good as it was advertised coming into the season. I think that's definitely an underreaction. I think we just have to see him go up against a shitty opponent after Notre Dame. And once they do that and get their gears going with and Stroud re gets his re picks up his connection with Njigba and those two other five-star recruits in Harrison Jr. and Ibuka, I think Ohio State's going to be fine, and I'm really scared to play them in week four because I thought that maybe you know, with their defense maybe not looking as good coming into the season, maybe Braylon Allen will be able to have one of his signature games. We could potentially get into a shootout. Doesn't look like that's what it's going to be. It looks like we're probably going to get killed. So yeah. Overreaction, underreaction. I'll probably do that every single week on this show. I want to talk more college football. It's a really great sport, and with the 12-team playoff, it's going to get even better. So last segment. It's hard. I've done this before, betting against Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time. It's not Aaron Rodgers, I'm sorry. It's Tom Brady's the GOAT. Aaron Rodgers is the GOAT, but Tom Brady's the GOAT. And right now I'm literally about to do that. I am doubting Tom Brady and I am doubting the Buccaneers this year. And there's a few reasons why. One, we got to talk about Tom Brady in, you know, mentally. So Tom Brady took that leave of absence, that 2 week leave of absence in the middle of the off se in the middle of a training camp this past month. And I don't think that was I think that people should have treated that as a little bit more of a big deal than, you know, maybe we thought it was. I think that guy really misses his family, and I think he really feels guilty about telling them that I was done with football and I'm going to be spending more time with you and I'm going to be spending more time with Giselle. And after a month, he was like, no, I can't do this. I got to go back to the game and I got to play. I think there's a lot of guilt in his mind about that, which is why, you know, we've seen him in these interviews saying that he's 45 years old. There's a lot of shit going on and stuff like that. I think there was shit going on with his family that he, you know, knew he had to be there for, because if he wasn't, then his family was going to be really mad at him about, you know, I thought you were going to be done after this year. I thought you were going to spend more time with us, and now you're out there playing football again. I think there's a lot of guilt with that. So when you have a quarterback like Tom Brady, who's 45 years old and feels like he has one foot out the door, and he's probably going to retire after this year, that's just not something I don't think any team wants. You know, having a quarterback who's that close, who retired and came back, but I feel it kind of came back against with some, you know, misgivings from his family. I don't think that's anything a team should want in their quarterback. Now, Tom Brady's great, and I think Tom Brady statistically will have another really good year. I think he's the third best quarterback in the NFL, but that's something that needs to be kept an eye on, is how Tom Brady is gonna, you know, react this year, playing more games. And will he have to take another leave of absence? I'm not sure, but if he does, I think we all know what's going on here. Tom Brady is feeling guilty about not unretiring. He's got a family. He's a family man. He loves his wife, and he just kind of leaves him like that. It feels kind of shabby to me, from if I was, you know, in the Brady family. And then two, we got to look at them as a roster. So they lose Ryan Jensen, one of the best centers in the NFL. Tom Brady has always had a great center snapping in the ball. He had David Andrews for all those years in New England, and he had Ryan Jensen for all of his years so far in Tampa Bay. And he's down for the year. Ali Marpet retires. Alex Kappa goes to the Bengals. That's a lot of interior pressure that the Bucs will be potentially allowing, you know, going into the NFL in the NFL season. Tom Brady, I think that's the one way you can potentially beat him. If you can pressure him up the middle and make him have to, you know, try to move his legs or make those big time throws under all that pressure from the inside. Thing is, if you give Tom Brady all the time in the world, he's going to tear you apart. But if you can pressure him and your corners on the outside can stay with those Tampa Bay receivers for as long as they can, I think that can lead to, you know, some problems for the Buccaneers. And on the defensive side, what we saw last year, I think, is that the Buccaneers defense probably isn't what it was that first year. They're really talented and they're really fast and they're really athletic, but I don't know if that exactly will translate into these coming years when, you know, I think Devin White has been a little overrated his entire career. I think Levante David's getting a little older, and you know, Leonard Fournette, back to the offensive side, Leonard Fournette is coming in overweight. And you know, Chris Godwin, we'll see how that injury lingers on for the rest of the season. And then obviously you lose Gronk. I don't know. It just seems like the Buccaneers, there's a lot of headlines going on out off the field that can lead to some distractions. Not to mention you lose Bruce Arians, who we saw in his offense, Tom Brady was flourishing, and now you kind of hand all those keys off to Byron Left, and you kind of hand the entire keys of the car to Byron Leftwich, who you may say probably what maybe was the he could have been the whole engine that made the Buccaneers offense go. We don't know that. We'll see kind of the effect that Bruce Arians had on the Buccaneers offense now that they don't have him and Todd Bowles is running the show. But I think that the Buccaneers, you know, if we look at the NFC, there's teams that we say, all right, these are the teams that can contend for a Super Bowl coming out of the NFC. And that's the Rams, that's the Packers, and then we look at teams like the Bucs and, you know, potentially teams like the Cardinals, and then you look at the Eagles. Can they, you know, take that next step with Jalen Hurts? But I don't know if the Buccaneers are in that Packers Rams class. I just think that there's too many questions about them going into the NFL season. And I think when you lose those three interior offensive linemen in Jensen, Marpet, and Kappa, I think that's something that can give Tom Brady fits going into every game. And interior pressure can always get to Tom Brady, and he's never really been without a Pro Bowl center at his side. And in these later years, I've seen it with Aaron Rodgers and his centers. The relationship you build with them is it's important. Aaron Rodgers had it with Corey Linsley all those years. He had it. He has it now with what's Josh Myers, and Tom Brady's not going to have that this year. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But if Tom Brady just keeps taking hits in the beginning of the year and he realizes, you know, I kind of essentially left my family to go play football one more year, I think it feels like he has one foot out the door, and I don't think he's going to be solely focused on winning a Super Bowl like he's always been in the previous years in his NFL career. All right, so looks like that'll about do it for today's episode, the first episode where you all can see my face, and I really enjoyed it. I think we're going to get some more episodes soon. I potentially, with the Imagine Sports guys, I don't know why I'm scratching my nose so much, but potentially with the Imagine Sports guys, I think we're going to be getting a pre-NFL kickoff on Sundays in the mornings, and we'll try to do a Twitch stream there and do some predictions for the games. We're going to try to keep the content rolling with Imagine Sports, so really excited for that. But for now, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Thirsty, thirsty, trying to choose. I mean, I know I'm pretty cool. My nitty bag, my kitty boots. I got the juice, I got the juice.
10-0, Chatham's on. Foolie's glad I'm on. Even my haters kinda glad I'm on. Rest in peace to my...